This is a podcast from thebuglepodcast.com.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 290 of The Bugle, the audio newspaper for a visual world that has charted the evolution of the planet Earth and its most famous species, human being, since 2007. I'm Andy Zaltzman, reporting to you from Hamilton, New Zealand. If New York is the city that never sleeps, then Hamilton is the town that never fully wakes up, occasionally mumbles something incoherent, and then just starts snoring and dribbling again. But from that city that never sleeps and isn't doing itself any long-term good by not getting at least 3 or 4 hours a night of downtime, it can't last New York, you're not Margaret f***ing Thatcher. It's the one-man espresso shot that keeps that sleepless city at least partly functional. It's the comedic caffeine, the satirical stimulant, the jolting Java himself, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. You're back upside down again, Andy. You've been right side, yep, upside down. Right side, upside down. You've been like an egg timer. A human egg timer.
Can I put that on my poster? A human egg timer.
What was it like having blood in your head again?
Oh, it's awesome. I don't know why, you know, just simply being in the Southern Hemisphere is worth any psychotropic drug that you could care to name.
So which games are you watching down there now?
Well, today I've been to New Zealand versus Bangladesh, which obviously is a rivalry as old as time itself. I'll tell you what I won't be watching, John, and that is any England matches, because England have been humiliatingly knocked out in what is not only probably the low point in English cricket history, but possibly the low point in the history of British civilization. We have been knocked out of a World Cup of a sport we invented, which we didn't spread to too many places to make sure we could always at least get to the quarterfinal. We have failed to get to the quarterfinal, John. We lost to Bangladesh and everyone else by humiliating margins, although today we did beat Afghanistan in a glorious victory over a nation that didn't play cricket 15 years ago. It's hot, dark times, John. Dark times.
Like you say, we invented the game, Andy. We should just take all the equipment with us so that there's nothing for them to play with in the quarterfinals. Wickets were our idea. Yeah. Stumps are our... We have the intellectual property over stumps and balls.
Yeah, I mean, it's like America losing to another nation at unnecessary spying on its own citizens. It is that bad, John. It is that bad. Tomorrow I get a train to Wellington, at the southern tip of the North Island. I've got my gigs there on Sunday. Still a few tickets available for the 6 p.m. show, as there are for Adelaide on the 21st, as there are in considerable numbers for the slightly overambitious second extra shows in Sydney on the 25th and Melbourne on the 27th. Details at satiristforhire.com. On my train journey, John, I will pass through some classic New Zealand towns, including Pukin in a car, call you a Pakenanuzi, Belch, and Waima Itanagulli. So it's going to be a fascinating journey through the beautiful island. And there's some big news here in New Zealand this week, John. The government has just announced plans to flight the kiwi, the notoriously flightless national bird of New Zealand. The government's announced plans to affix 20% of all kiwis to drones to give them the chance to feel what it's like to be a real bird. Prime Minister John Key explained, after everything the kiwi has done for New Zealand in terms of our global brand, we felt it was time to give something back. And it's symbolic. If the kiwi can literally fly, that sends a message that any New Zealander can metaphorically fly. Before he returned to dyeing his hair and being accused of having different coloured pubes by opposing politicians. That's what New Zealand is, John. It is politicians suggesting in Parliament that the collars do not match the cuffs. That is the height of politics in this glorious nation. This is Bugle 290. We've now done the same number of bugles as the record number of consecutive screwed-up bits of paper thrown into a waste bin by a world leader in his or her office, recently broken by the Norwegian Prime Minister Erna Solberg, who got bored just because she has absolutely nothing to f***ing do as Prime Minister of Norway, breaking the record set by the notoriously indecisive President Franklin Pierce of the USA in 1856 when he was trying to write a speech about ducks to give it a new Washington bird sanctuary. We're recording on Friday the 13th. This is a high-risk bugle, John, to be recording on this most unlucky of all days. Did you know that more people are likely to die on Friday the 13th this year than died on any Friday the 13th in the 19th century? That cannot be coincidence. The power of this day is getting greater and greater. Here's an extraordinary quote from Donald Dossey, the founder of the Stress Management Centre and Phobia Institute in Asheville, North Carolina. Talking about Friday the 13th, it's been estimated that $800 or $900 million is lost in business every Friday the 13th because people will not fly or do the business they would normally do. That's a lot of money, John. And you wonder why people do not respect America as a nation anymore. It's not the decades of dubious foreign policy interventions and economic prong-plonking. It is the fact that Friday the 13th costs America almost $1 billion every time it happens. Of course it's not an unlucky day. It's just hocus-pocus bullshit. It's just a normal... Shit, I've just electrocuted myself on a grape. Maybe there's something in it. As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, a free massage. We're not actually giving you a free massage, but we will advise you on where you can get one. This week, just lean on the rumbling engine of a bus in a traffic jam. That section, in the bin.
Top story this week. The lost art of letter writing has been found. Now will someone please lose it again? It's the Bugle Letter Roundup. Andy, there are so many forms of letter writing. Love letters, ransom letters, letters of complaint and resignation, letters written in calligraphy, green ink, blood, or just from letters of the alphabet cut out of magazines. Humanity has truly mastered the art of physical correspondence. And of course, once you've mastered something, there's no greater thrill than completely destroying it. And let's begin with the fact that this week saw a spectacular letter written from Senator Tom Cotton and co-signed by 46 fellow Republican senators to the leaders of Iran. And if you're thinking, oh, why the f*** are they trying to strike up a pen pal relationship with the regime they claim to despise? That is an entirely fair question. The letter seemed to be designed to undermine the White House in their current nuclear negotiations with Iran, but I cannot, for the life of me, see who thought this would be a good idea, why they thought it was a good idea, or what the f*** they were thinking about when they were thinking it would be a good idea. Because the tone in this letter lies somewhere between conspiratorial and breathtakingly patronising. At one point, they suggest that Iran's leaders may not fully understand our constitutional system. They then attempt to describe that system, but in doing so, don't get things completely right. They claim in the letter that the Senate ratifies treaties, but that's not in fact true. Members give advice and consent, but the president signs off. Now, that's a minor point, but it's the kind of minor point you really want to get right when you're lecturing foreign governments about constitutional intricacies. It's also a bit presumptuous to assume that the Iranian president would not understand the concept of term limits, especially because the Iranian president is himself term limited. That's like trying to explain to a tortoise what living inside a shell is like.
Iran has been reacting unimpressively to the letter. Its supreme leader hit back at the Republican senators, claiming he was worried because the United States was known for, quotes, backstabbing. And I think what this letter shows, John, is America's not just known for backstabbing. It is built into its very constitutional framework. And what the Republicans seem to be doing here is not merely stabbing Obama in the back, but stabbing him in the back whilst leaning round the front and saying to his face, I am stabbing you in the back. It is truly extraordinary politics. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, the ultimate authority on all Iranian matters of state, that is one catchy tagline, added at a meeting that whenever negotiations made progress, the Americans became like a pair of 1920s underpants. So he didn't actually say that. He used the words harsher, tougher and coarser. Some very old Spanish letter news now, and the Spanish government has ruled that a letter written by Christopher Columbus to his son in 1498 cannot leave Spain. The aristocratic Alba dynasty has been trying to sell the document to raise money for its vast collections of old shit, but the court has ruled it cannot leave Spain. If only they'd done the same with Columbus himself in 1492, the world might be very different place today. It'd be very different for you, John. You'd be hosting a TV show in Madrid. The letter has been valued at £15 million. There are rumours that Real Madrid are interested in purchasing the letter for £35 million. Not entirely clear how they're going to use the letter, but I'm sure they'll find a spot for it. But the Cultural Ministry have blocked the sale of the letter because the letter is, quote, an intrinsic part of Spain's national heritage. But it's very hard to quantify these things, John. I mean, if the letter was sold, no doubt there would be people across the notoriously tasty nation stumbling to work thinking, oh no, the House of Alba has sold that letter. It now has only 20 of its 21 letters written by Columbus left. I just don't know who the f*** I am anymore. Am I Spanish? What is Spain? Why am I eating so many little things on plates when I could be eating two or three big things on one big plate, like everyone else? I just don't feel the urge anymore to writhe around in tomatoes, let alone goad a bull to death in front of a crowd. What am I doing on this planet? Sure, I'll still chuck a donkey off a church if it needs doing, but I'll give the failed horse a parachute. The useless beast has suffered enough, and I just don't know what Spain means. Columbus, of course, one of the defining figures in Spanish history, although he was, of course, Italian, who explored for Team Spain on a big money contract that really didn't help young Spanish explorers coming through to get into the top jobs. And it's very much like modern-day British football, but more so, and for a discernible purpose. At the same time, John, once you open that dam, that cultural dam, and let things leave, where will it end? Once a dam is open, as the old saying goes, all the dolphins are going to swim through it to freedom. And if Spain flogs off Chrissy Columbus's letter to his son, where will it end? Within a few years, they will have flogged off the Alhambra to Dubai, and Pedro Almodovar will be making tourism adverts for Abu Dhabi. And we have very much the same problem in Britain. We have to fight to hang on to our great pieces of cultural heritage, the Parthenon marbles, Leonardo da Vinci's The Virgin of the Rocks, the Royal Koh-i-Noor diamond still adorning the Queen Mother's crown long after the Queen Mother herself ceased adorning the concept of being alive. All these things of crucial importance to our national identity, more so than, for example, the railways, the energy sector, the media, and airports. I mean, we can do without them, but we cannot do without a stolen diamond in a dead woman's hat, without losing our entire concept of Britishness. The late Duchess of Alba owned vast amounts of things like this, John, including an art collection, including paintings by Frankie the Palette Man Goya and Diego Velázquez, the Golden Easel himself, a first edition of Don Quixote by Miki Cervantes, the self-styled Daniel Steele of early 17th century Spanish literature, Christopher Columbus's first map of America, and the last will and testament of Ferdinand the Catholic. Well, that is a real showstopper at dinner parties. He was the father of Catherine the Aragon, or, as Henry VIII came to know her, Cranky Kate. So she owned all these things, John, this Duchess. She must have been f***ing hard to buy Christmas presents for. A coffee table book of pictures of the Earth from space? Whoopee f***ing shittity-doo. I've got Columbus's first map of America. I think I'll look at that instead. Stick it on the pile with the book of classic motorbikes you got me last year that I haven't read because I've been too busy telling everyone that my copy of Don Quixote is 400 f***ing years old, which coincidentally is the same number of f***ing years since Miki Cervantes wrote the f***ing thing. Next, oh, a novelty apron with the body of Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man on it. I'm pretty sure I own the original of that. Maybe I don't on reflection. I cannot remember because I'm too busy looking at all my Velasquezes. Oh, look, that's a good one. He was really f***ing good at painting. It's time now for a Bugle Q&A. Once again, you've sent in your questions on Twitter, and we've set ourselves up very much as your, you know, satirical, political, personal agony aunts, a role we've been really destined for ever since birth. And some very, very searching questions came in, including this from at Dan J. Webster, who asks, what is the appropriate number of kitchens to have in your house? Should I feel kitchen envy that I only have the one?
Well, that depends what century you're in, doesn't it, really? You know, if you're going to take the Downton Abbey approach to that, then you need multiple kitchens to separate the class contained in the house. So it depends whether you live in a classless society or not. You very much need big kitchen for the peasants to service you in, and, you know, luxury kitchen upstairs, basically ornamental.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in many ways it's good to have this kind of envy, because envy is very much the piston engine of capitalism. Without us thinking, I want that shit, we would all grind to a steaming halt. This came in from at Come On Ace, who asks, John, if you were to rank global leaders on the basis of the likelihood that Vladimir Putin will assassinate them, Who do you think would be at number one?
Well, I think anyone in Ukraine really has should have a justified sense of panic whenever they hear a Russian accent on the TV, phone, or especially in the room.
Yeah, they do have to be pretty high up there. Unless he just gets a bit creative and just tests the water by, you know, bumping off the president of Burundi or something, just to see what he can get away with. I think a possibility is that he might assassinate himself just to see how he reacts to it. I feel he might be reaching that level of boredom with his own provocations. This came from The Metal Hipster. It's a very, very important question, this. You might be able to answer it, John. The question is, what is the circumference of Andy Zaltzman's head?
I'm not sure it's ever been circumnavigated, has it, Andy? You need a 13th century Spaniard in a wooden ship to do it.
Well, I'm not sure you can measure it anyway, John. They can't measure the circumference of my head. It's not a distance. It's a concept. You can feel it. You cannot put a numerical value on the circumference of my head, and I resent the implication that you even think it's possible, the metal hipster. John, this comes from @TimLawrence, who asks, will you appear in the televised leaders' debates, and if not, why not?
Which televised? What's he talking about?
Well, in the run-up to the general election in the country that you used to be a citizen of many years ago.
That place, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll happily appear. Can I do a song in the middle of it?
Well, I think I might spice things up a bit. I mean, you've got a lot of influence in television these days. I think, you know, if David Cameron won't appear on it, you could appear as his official spokesman. I think, that could win the election for the Tories, I think. Tim also asks, could sledging the opposition in pun form improve the England cricket team's results?
Well, for
non-cricket aficionados, sledging is the noble art of abusing the living f*** out of opposition players in an attempt to distract them and make them fail.
Sure, but, you know, sledging in that sense and sledging in the other sense might improve it as well. You know, getting a sledge and hurtling down a hill and trying to smash into the opposite. Anything would improve the England cricket team's performance, wouldn't it? Self-harm would improve it. Eating a pizza would improve it.
Yes.
I'm not sure anything can make it worse.
No, that is... nothing could make it worse, John. No, absolutely... absolutely, and you're right, we are good at sledging. Lizzie Yarnold recently won a world championship in the skeleton, so we are literally better at sledging. This came in from Roars, who asked, will the Bugle be sued by Marvin Gaye's estate? John did once on the Bugle sing Let's Get It On. So I don't remember that particular one, but I do tend to blank these things out for psychological purposes.
Well, I'm guessing they won't because, you know, unlike Pharrell, I sang a Marvin Gaye song and I think probably attributed it to Marvin Gaye, or at the very least didn't claim that I'd written it. So I think that's probably the legal distinction there.
That is the absolute key difference. That also with Blurred Lines, obviously big in the news this week, they actually copied the video as well from the original video of Perry Como's Magic Moments, which featured nude women and a stuffed dead sheep. So, of course, it was the 1950s, so it was never fully broadcast. Death to the West asks, that's a striking Twitter handle, how can I convert my friends and family to communism?
Well, you know, there's some historical lessons there. Usually that's probably suppressing your friends and family violently. Over a series of decades. Yeah, it's not really converting them, it's forcing them. That's really how it works. And then seizing their property from them in the under the guise of collectivising. I mean, there is a blueprint, but it does involve a lot of blood.
Alternatively, you could just get them a job in 1950s Hollywood and they will automatically become communists.
That's probably
just
quicker.
The way it worked in those days. Does that still happen, John? When you've spent a bit of time in showbiz land,
oh, sure.
Over in LA,
have
you felt yourself?
If you say no to any notes that anyone gives you, they'll say, "What are you, a communist?" with a glint in their eye.
Caroline James asks, I've got an ice skating date tomorrow. What should I wear to look attractive whilst minimising my chances of breaking a bone? Now, that's a very... I mean, it's a tough question, that. I mean, that's a strange date for me, the ice skating date.
I mean, sequins.
A suit of armour.
Sequin suit of armour.
There simply are not enough sequin suits of armour in today's ice skating world. I mean, the great thing is, you know, it's a talking point on a date. You know, why are you wearing a sequin suit of armour? Oh, I'm just trying to impress you. I mean, that has to... That's an icebreaker. Literally an icebreaker. And also, it does also depend on how attractive you are to start with, I guess. Whether you want to go with the full medieval helmet or not. But anyway, best of luck. Do report back on whether your ice skating date in a full suit of armour proves romantically successful. This one comes from the real S. O'Neill, who asks, can dogs look up?
Can dogs look up? What was that question? Can dogs look up? Yes.
Can dogs look up? Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's...
Can dogs look up? Yeah, physically dogs can look up. That's something they could have just Googled or just stood above a dog and made a noise.
Right. It could be that this man's dog is dead and he just wants some indirect way of confirming this. But, I mean, you have a dog, I mean, and you've noticed it definitely.
Yeah, she looks up.
Looking up.
Yeah, she definitely. She definitely looks up when there's something above her she wants, or just out of general curiosity. Yeah, she's looked up repeatedly across her lifespan so far, and I imagine she'll continue to do it. That's definitely a weapon in her arsenal. Is looking up. It's up there with barking.
Right. Okay, I think you might be mixing, Sean, you might be mixing dogs up with carpets, which, of course, always look down. This comes from Bo Jacobs. How is Margaret Thatcher doing in heaven?
Did he stop typing there? Did he say, can dogs look up things on the internet? Because that's a more difficult question.
Yes, mostly just pictures of humans saying sausages, I think.
So what was the next question?
So Bo Jacobs asks, how is Margaret Thatcher doing in heaven?
Well, I guess that depends how effectively she's hiding.
Yeah, I was going to say, if she's there, she's doing f***ing well, frankly, and she's just got to be happy with it. This comes from Josie Bobsky, who asks, why have you not addressed the Dwight Howard penis grab? Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about. Are you familiar with the Dwight Howard penis grab,
I'm
John?
Not. I'm not familiar with that.
All right. Okay. Well, let's. I'll do some. This one only just came in, so I'm now going to type Dwight Howard penis grab into Google, and
you're going to deal with the consequences of that.
I'm going to deal with the consequences of that and the any legal cases that may arise. Dwight Howard grabbed his teammate's penis. That's the first thing that comes up. He's grabbed Isaiah Kanan's penis.
Oh.
Very much. Yeah. I mean, who is Dwight Howard, John? I mean, that's...
Was that during a game?
Crucial bit of, it does look like it might have been... I mean, in terms of... So what sport does he play, Dwight Howard? I'm not
Dwight
sure.
Howard plays basketball. He's just found a loophole that's not technically a foul. Right. You can grab another player's penis during the game to get leverage.
Right. I've not played as much basketball as you, Johnny. Tell me, I mean, is that strategically valid, the penis grab?
I guess it depends if you want the person not to jump as high.
So, I mean, but it's not something you do for your teammate.
Oh, for your teammate? Right.
Well, what is the tactical advantage of... Yeah. Why would you grab your own teammate's...
Maybe you're trying to fling him higher, like in rugby at the line-outs. Maybe you're trying to help him up.
What, kind of slingshot him round your head? That's possible. I mean, basketball players notoriously have extremely elastic... members, so I mean, it is possible that this was some attempt at a had a sort of a Hail Mary magic shot in the last few seconds of a game. Anyway, thanks for bringing our attention to that, Josie Bobsky. And we'll finish on this one. It comes from Sari Gamp. Name the actors who will play each of you in the eventual Bugle film.
Vin Diesel for me, Andy. Always Vin Diesel.
Oh, I wanted Diesel. I think I'd go for... I'm trying to think of someone who's most like me spiritually and physically. I think I'll probably have to go for Scarlett Johansson.
Nice.
Very much peas in a physical pod for me and SJ. So,
and then Chris, you probably want Meryl Streep, don't you, Chris? Just to...
Yeah, maybe Meryl, but I quite like Liza Minnelli for me as well.
Well, that would be great.
A couple more we should probably address. Stephen Buckley asks, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your favourite colour of the alphabet? I just like that collection of words.
What's the question?
On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your favourite colour of the alphabet?
Colour of what?
Colour of the alphabet.
You heard it right.
Colour of the alphabet.
Yep. I think he's gone indirect on this one.
I see.
I think if you read it backwards,
Stephen
he's
having a bit of fun with words there, isn't he, Stephen? Yeah. Good for him.
He's having a bit of fun, or possibly calling in a terrorist strike. We don't know. That could be code. And finally, Amira Ames asks, should I get a Bugle tattoo?
Oh, God, no. No.
Well, I would say yes. I mean, it's more than just something to listen to. It's something to have imprinted on your skin for the rest of your life. You know, and hopefully in many millennia to come, your embalmed corpse will be dug up and people will look upon the cartoon images of me and John and think that you must have been some form of god or king. So I'd say get it. So thanks very much for your questions for the Bugle Q&A. Do keep your emails coming into info@thebuglepodcast.com. Don't forget to check out our SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/the-bugle. Sport now, and we got knocked out of the f***ing World Cup, John. Oh, God. It was England's worst ever Cricket World Cup campaign, which is a very hotly contested title, alongside, for example, Most Ostentatious Dictator, My Worst Ever Gig, Least Necessary Film Sequel, nothing personal, John, and Deadest Pterodactyl. And England just kept making the same mistakes, using the same kind of outdated tactics. And as I said, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again whilst smacking yourself in the plums with a watermelon. Or it's something along those lines. Or doing the same thing again and expecting Abraham Lincoln to come back from the dead and sort things out. But basically, England did exactly the same thing. There was one period in this game with Bangladesh when they needed to keep scoring at a decent rate, but they got very defensive. And they played out lots of balls with no runs. That's basically a point for our American listeners scored. And when a ball is scored a no run, it's described as a dot ball. That's how it's marked in the scorebook. And at one point there were three dots in a row and then a further four dots. So dot, dot, dots, dot, 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 dot. Then two more dots. And then a player had a bit of a flash at the ball, what you might call a dash of a shot. So it was basically dot, 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 dash. And in Morse code, that spelt shit. And that was very much the summary of England's glorious Cricket World Cup campaign. That is it for this week's Bugle. We will hopefully be back next week, or it may indeed be the start of the Bugle Easter break for this year. Thanks very much for listening. Do come to my gigs in Wellington this Sunday if you listen to this in time, or in Australia, details at satiristforhire.com, and send in your satirical demands to satirise this at satiristforhire.com. And the Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott, your old friend John, is giving plenty of ammunition at the moment. There was a comment he made when he basically suggested that Aboriginal Australians living far away from cities is a lifestyle choice and that they cannot expect state's benefits. It's almost like the man is trying to become so much of a that Australia re-elects him just to see what he does next. He's truly extraordinary. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of Abbotts at the gigs. Until next time, Buglers, thanks very much for listening from the wrong side of the world. Goodbye.
Bye.